Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on. Figure. We've done that f***ing! Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they sink sardines. Will be strong into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
I'll take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
You're listening to Keys and Gray, the podcast. I am Richard Keys.
And I'm the other. I'm Andy Gray.
There are only so many ways you can do that.
I keep trying, don't I?
Can you imagine the two runnies down the years? It's a good night from me,
and it's good night from him.
Isn't there something else you can do, guys? Yeah. Anyway,
this
is, I don't know, number. Well, I think we're approaching a half century, and some very exciting news at the end of this podcast about the direction in which we're going. Week after next.
And I can confirm it's forward, not backwards.
Correct. Speaking of which, a whole host of different stories this week, Andy, which I've been desperate to get around to talking to you about. Congratulations, first of all, to Jorginho.
Yes.
The best player in Europe. Mm-hmm. Some didn't see coming.
I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Champions League winner.
Yeah, I know that. But there was another 10 in that team.
Yeah.
European, you're going to see...
Yes.
Yeah.
I know there was another 10 in that, but there's always another 10, but...
Yeah, I know. But I just... Honestly, Keezy, I mean, listen, the guy's a good player. He's had a very good season out of this world, probably for him. But I don't sit here, as I have done for the last 15 years, maybe longer, looking at the player of the year, and imagining in my head all the magnificent things I've seen them do that season, either creatively or scoring goals themselves or making saves or whatever. You tell me five good things you remember Jorginho doing. Well, come on. And I mean that with respect to the kid.
It would be difficult to think of one standout moment.
Players like Jorginho don't normally win best players.
So is there an argument they should?
Maybe. And maybe this is the proof of the pudding. But if you'd have said to a Chelsea fan 12 months ago, Jorginho's going to be the best player in Europe next year, they'd have laughed at you, because he was having the torrid time as well.
Yeah, that's also
he was in and out the side, couldn't get a game. It was only really after Frank went that he started to play regularly again.
We record Fridays. So much can happen today, let alone prior to the window closing, but we will get round to discussing one or two of the suggested transfers that are imminent in a moment. But before that, congratulations also to Mikel Antonio. Andy Dunn in the Mirror on Friday. It's a fine effort, but your 49-goal record, Mikel, is made of cardboard, which is a reference, obviously, to the cutout that he went across and celebrated with.
Yes.
Okay. Now, here's the argument.
Go on.
He says, Mikel Antonio, a thoroughly likable guy and a very effective striker, is billed as a record holder, hailed as some sort of groundbreaker for scoring 49 goals in 160 league appearances for his club.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a fine effort. He was a winger and a fullback before turning to a centre forward. But let's face it, he is a record breaker for one reason only. The top flight of English football changed its name in 1992.
Mm-hmm. This has always been a bugbear of mine, as you know.
Well, this is why I'm asking you. 49 right. goals. In the 20s and 30s, Vic Watson scored 203 times in 295 appearances for West Ham in the old First Division. Mm-hmm. But you were party to what's happened.
Yes, but I wasn't party to saying, right, do you know you guys that played pre-1992? Your achievements don't count anymore.
Well, we didn't think it through, did we?
No, we didn't. And listen, I get that they like to hoist up Premier League records, the best Premier League, or more appearances in the Premier League than anyone else. Well, every time I hear Harry Kane totted up as Tottenham, I think of Jimmy Greaves immediately. Oh. And others, Keezy, are you telling me that class. Jimmy Greaves should be forgotten about?
No.
And his record of goals
that's
should
what
be
I'm
forgotten
saying.
About?
We didn't think I don't it get through. It. When we started... We would look at previous fixtures. Do you remember?
Yes.
And we were always of the opinion that they should only include Premier League games. Mm. So,
see, that wasn't, I remember back then. That wasn't my decision. That was yours. You were guilty. You were the guilty.
I said, we were
I remember
very
in a
much,
meeting saying to you, Keezy, come on. No, you can't do that. You went, yes, we are.
You were very much party to that because we'd started something new and we wanted the clock to be reset.
Yes,
so it is
that.
Our fault.
Yeah, in many
but
ways.
As I look back now, I get it because it was fresh and it was different. But now, I would have to say it was a mistake.
It was a mistake. Are you trying to tell me Dixie Dean's record should be expunged
what I'm
from Everett's
well,
history?
If we follow this to its conclusion, you didn't have a career.
I didn't have a career. No, not at all. No,
and I can't be right. So apologies.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
I do agree with Andy Dunn this morning. I think he's absolutely right. Again, it's a column I like reading, mm-hmm. as you know, and I enjoy what he has to say on a Friday. And that, I think, is very poignant. Romelu Lukaku. I went to bed last week thinking to myself, when did I last see as an effective performance from a number nine mm-hmm. in the Premier League? I thought of Alan Shearer. I thought of Drogba. Mm-hmm. And I kind of ended there.
Yeah, that
I thought he was magnificent.
That
Andy.
Kind of player. I thought he'd done an unbelievable debut. He terrified the two centre backs. Let's get it straight right away. And they had no idea how to cope with him. They got tight and either fouled him or he shrugged him off because of his strength and his ability to turn. He took them into places they didn't want to go. His goal tells you everything about how high, and it shows you how football really fundamentally hasn't changed a lot, Keezy. He scored a goal against them, his opening goal for his new Chelsea career, second time round, that would have been coached in my day, that I learned to do. Come short to the ball. Remember Ron Saunders teaching me this and Jim McLean. When you come short to the ball, Andy, get involved in the first action. I'll use the modern day words. Get involved in the first action, Andy. So I would. I'd come short, look for it, and then pop it off. And as soon as I did that, Jim McLean and Saunders were... Tongue, spin, next time I want to see you is in the penalty area. His goal was exactly that. He came short, linked up the play, spun, and then physically said to Mari, get out of the way, son, I've got business here. Into the middle of the six-yard box, slid it in, empty goal. Perfect. And you could have been coaching that 30 years ago to somebody, 40 years ago, and that's what centre-forwards did. And it's supposed to be archaic and dinosaur-like, and people will probably, the modern-day coach... who loves all this passing movement, all that stuff, we'll probably look at that and go, you're not going to get many of those goals. Let's wait and see. Mm. Let's wait and see. I thought he was terrific. He was a handful. We knew he would be. There's a confidence about him that maybe wasn't there at United when he left. Probably wasn't there because he was in and out the side. It didn't go that well for him. But he looked back to what we know he can do. And it looked like Chelsea players suddenly thought, we've got a front man. We've got somebody that might
tip this title.
It's
funny how everybody wants a front man again, isn't it?
Look at City. Look at the mess they're in. Look at the mess they're in.
Of their own making.
Of their own making.
You want Kane, as we've been
but
saying
but you try
here,
to be too clever,
and elsewhere,
easy.
Go and buy him.
But you
try
to be too clever.
Money.
You know, you won the league and you played a lot of games with Jason Joint without a centre-forward or a false nine. Good, carry on. I've said to you, I don't think they win the league without a centre-forward this year. I really don't.
Who said never? City have a lot of good players and might be a problem for United, Arsenal and Chelsea, but that doesn't interest me. I'm only interested in playing for Real Madrid and Barcelona and Valencia. Who later said, you think money is going to change my mind at 30 years old? I don't think so. I don't think this is going to be a problem. If you speak about money, I could go to Qatar. They would probably have more money than Manchester City. It's not about money, it's about the passion.
Well, I'm guessing it's Ronaldo.
Correct.
Where's he going?
Well, again, this is what I said. Events could overtake us today. And
Come on, you're the journalist.
I don't know, Andy. Mino Raiola, I read, the Sun are reporting this morning that Raiola has also been seen in Paris. Now, I don't think that you have to get on a plane and fly to a city to negotiate the terms of selling a player these days.
No,
I think
not Ronaldo.
It's a lot more smart than that, isn't it? There are many different ways that you can do it rather than... It's why I always laugh when I see Sky posting reporters outside training grounds on transfer deadline day. It's the last place anybody's going to go if you're buying or selling a player.
I know.
It's just nonsense.
I would go to the local hospital. You get more chance of getting...
Private hospital.
Private hospitals.
So I don't know. I'm fascinated in your thoughts. We discussed it last week and you weren't sure. But now that City haven't got Harry Kane for 25 million. Are you prepared to commit to a 35, 36 year old?
He'll be 36 next month.
Who I read today also is asking for 580,000 a week.
No.
125, if those are the figures mentioned, fine. Come and play.
Yeah. Well, if money's not important, Cristiano, and you want to end your career in a top league at a top club, then, you know, sign for 200 grand. Mm. Be the highest paid at City if you want. That would be about what, 300?
300-400. But I wouldn't pay him that, would
no,
you?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I don't know where he's going to end up. I get confused with Cristiano at times because he does say lots of great things like you read out there and things like that. Money's not important. But then why is he not then saying, I don't need the money? Do you think Cristiano Ronaldo needs money?
No, he earns more from his Instagram account
than he does
from playing football.
Well, there you go.
So I'm with you. I think
footballing billionaire?
Yeah. So go and play.
Finish.
At the highest level you can. Plainly, he doesn't want to be in Turin.
No.
But where else other than Manchester City or Paris? There aren't any options that I can see.
Why would Paris want another one?
Well, because Mbappe's obviously going to go to Real Madrid.
You think so? Not for the money they've offered.
No, but we've got a week, Andy. Yeah. I mean, 24 hours is a long time.
But you see, you know the thing about Ronaldo and City and Harry Kane? This is what I don't get. They're prepared. I don't know what Ronaldo would sign for, how many years. He's 35. They'd probably give him 2 years minimum. Mm. So that's another 50 mil plus whatever he earned, bonuses and image rights and everything like that. So you're talking about the best part of 100 mil just for Ronaldo for 2 years.
I'm with you.
Why not pay the extra 20, 30 mil and get Harry Kane for 4 years?
I don't know.
I mean, it makes
staggering.
No sense to me.
None.
It's almost like, and I read this one in the English papers, it's almost like City went, we're getting Kane. That's a given, right? So we don't need to have a contingency plan. Should it go tits up? Oh, sorry, am I allowed to say
that? No, of course you are. It's our podcast. You say what you like, son.
All right, so should it go tits up, we have a contingency plan. We've got someone else. Maybe like a Danny Ings, let's say, right? Or somebody that's just second level.
I agree.
Right? Who we know is quality in the
Premier League. Your mother used to say to you? Pennywise, pound foolish.
Yeah, that's it. Pennywise, pound foolish. So I think they've been caught up and I think they've been caught out.
I remember hearing the story of Manchester City trying to sign Van Persie.
Go and tell us.
He wanted 13 million. That's what he
wanted.
Wages.
Net.
Yeah, they all go netto, don't they? So what does City do? They offer 8. the coach who was present in the meeting where the negotiation started said to me later, I have never left a player more convinced that he would sign for us, ever, in all the business deals I've done. He wanted to join Manchester City. Mm-hmm. City knew that.
Yeah.
So they get clever.
Yeah.
I'm not coming for 8. 10. No, it's not. It's 13 or it's nothing.
Right.
12. No. At which point the phone rings. Hello, difficult situation, son. You know.
It's Fergie.
What do you want? 13. Done. Right.
And who won them the league next year?
He did. That's how to do business.
Yeah.
When you've got it, Andy, why get clever?
Why mess about? I don't get this. These are supposed to be really switched on, clever, intellectual businessmen who have done a brilliant job with City and taken it to where it is. But they're missing something. And they could have got one of the best front men in world football, not just England or Europe, in world football for 20 million more than they offered.
That they're probably going to pay to Ronaldo.
And what on earth were they thinking about? And not just pushing it over the line and saying, what is it you want, Daniel? You want 140. We'll give you 140 plus 10. How's that? Okay, deal done. Let's do it. Thanks very much. Let's do it.
Right. Let's introduce our guest, who has to be and we need to make the call and ensure that he has joined us by the time I introduce him, Andy, because I'd like to get his reaction to many of the things that I'm going to read. Has to be our most successful overseas export ever. We first met him when we were doing the show on Talk Sport. Mm-hmm. We used to have a section called A Brit Abroad.
Brit Abroad.
And it was inspired by the fact we got so many European world coaches coming to work in our league that we thought, well, there must be British coaches somewhere else. And we just kept finding one after another dozens of them, all in strange places. We spoke to this guy and he blew us away. And I've been desperate ever since to talk to him. His name is Steve Darby. He was born and raised in Liverpool. Oh. His family are blue to the core.
Are they? Excellent.
He's red.
What?
Yes. How that happened, I don't know.
No, he can't be. He must have been adopted.
Coaching record.
He must have been adopted.
Is extraordinary. So before I read that, let's get on the telephone Steve Darby.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, so Steve, how are you, my friend? All good?
Salam alaikum. Kayf halak, habibi?
Alhamdulillah, tamam, habibi.
Tamam, shukran. Ahabbek, habibi, ahabbek.
Mushtaq lek, habibi, mushtaq lek.
Now he's Zane, lost, you see. Now he's that lost. Was my Arabic from a long, long time ago.
I've left you behind now, son. Oh, by the way, are you going to read out his...
I'm going to read, because it is, I said he's probably our most decorated export ever.
Right.
And here's the evidence.
Go on.
Got his UEFA A license in 1979, became an official FIFA instructor for the Oceania region in 81, an AFC instructor in 1998, was technical director of the Australian Federation between 1990 and 95. Moved to Sydney Olympic, left in 98 to coach Johor FA after a successful spell, winning the Malaysia and FA Cup and league title. He left in 2001 to take charge of the Vietnamese women's team, who he led to a gold medal at the 2001 SEA Games, the first ever gold medal for Vietnam in football. After that, he was appointed youth team coach for Sheffield Wednesday under Terry Yorath, left a year later. I don't know why, we'll find out.
Yeah.
Went to Singapore in his four-year tenure as home United boss. Derby led them to a league and cup double in 2003, a semi-final spot in the AFC Cup, also winning the Singapore Cup in 2005. Not done yet. At the end of his home contract, Darby was heavily linked with the vacant Indian manager's post. However, didn't take that job, choosing instead to go to Perak, despite offers from two other Malaysian clubs and a Vietnamese club.
Keezy, we've only got 4 minutes left.
We've got as much time as we like. He led Perak to the Super Cup in 2005, wow. Second spot in the league in 2007, Malaysia Cup final in 2008, AFC quarterfinals. It was the furthest a Malaysian side had ever gone in the AFC competitions in that time. Still not done.
No.
In 2008, he was appointed Thailand coach, working with, this is where it gets interesting, Peter Reid and Brian Robson. But this, I could go on. I'm not going to. That's enough. Wow, Steve, how on earth did all that start?
Now, before we, I want to, I've got one question to ask him, because this has annoyed me.
Go on.
The last 48 hours, right? When you told me we'd talk to Steve, right? How was it, this is the most important question he's going to get today, that you were born into a blue family on Merseyside and end up supporting the Reds?
Well, I was born in Anfield. You know the area well, just on the other side of Stanley Park, right on Anfield Road. So every week, my dad took me either to Everton, which he wanted me to be.
Sensible dad, yeah.
Yeah, and because, obviously, you love football so much, he took me to the Anfield Road end the other weekend. You know, that was what we did. You know, Stanley Park end with me box, Anfield Road end with me box. And then, you know, I was
Steve, hold on just a minute. When he says my box, he doesn't mean my private box, which modern day fans...
He means a wooden box.
He means a little wooden box that he used to stand on. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah.
Okay.
The little box behind the wooden, the metal barrier, And when they scored, you used to get absolutely rib crushed. But anyway, it was worth it. So, brought up on Everton, but the big thing was, I think, and I look back in hindsight, a few people have asked me, including my family, it was Shanks. Something about the man was magical.
Can't argue with you there. I was looking for an argument, Steve, but I'm afraid the word Shanks has just done me.
And I was lucky enough to meet him later in life. And, you know, the old cliche, don't meet your heroes, throw that out the window. He was everything and more that I wanted.
Yeah, well, what was the first piece of advice he gave you, though?
Well, the next piece of advice was fascinating. I'd watched him. In those days, you could go to Melwood and watch them train. It was about 1978. And I got there early one morning because I missed them walking around the pitch playing five-a-side and a few sprints, because that's what they did in those days. There wasn't no sophisticated analysis and coaching too much. But I got there early and there was Shanks running around, and I thought, this is my chance to speak to God. You know, so I thought, if I don't take it, I'll regret it. You know, I've regretted a few nights in the Grafton in Liverpool. you two will know about.
I've never been there. I've never been in the Grafton, you.
Not on Grab a Granny night.
Not that I can remember anyway, Steve.
So I said to Shanks, I said, look, you know, I said, Mr., because you have to, you know, speaking to God. I said, Mr. Shanks, I'm going to Bahrain, my first ever professional job. What advice would you give me? And he just looked at me. And every time you speak about Shanks, you've got to put the accent on, haven't you?
Yes,
you can't help it. And he just said, son, you've got to learn to make tea. And I had no idea what he meant. And it just suddenly clicked. So I had to go and make him a cup of tea. He sat down, got changed. And I won't say we had a conversation. I'll say it was a monologue. Because I wasn't dare going to interrupt him. And I really wish I had, you know, in those days, the mobile phone was at the end of the road in a big red box. So I just listened to the man. And he was absolutely magnificent.
Oh, he was extraordinary. I feel very, very fortunate to have spent time with him. Yeah. Not much, but just to have been around the guy. What an aura, Steve. Yeah. Why or how did a 5'9" goalkeeper of average ability find his way around the world, winning more trophies abroad than any other British coach? How did that happen?
Well, I suppose it's the right place, right time, isn't it? And I've been playing in, obviously, you know, I was playing 60 games a season in Liverpool in those days, school, boys' club, Sunday League. Sunday League was great in those days. I got paid £25 a game, which was, I loved it.
Then, yeah.
It was a lot of money in the 70s, but it was brutal, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you didn't argue with certain people, but you played. And I played for Merseyside Grammar Schools with a fellow called Steve Coppell, who wasn't bad either. No. And so I'd gone across the tramway. I'd been signed like the associate schoolboy thing, they called them then in those days. And then the coach came up to me, a Scottish lad, and just looked at me and said, son, we heard you're going to be good enough to do A-levels. And I said, yeah, but I didn't want to because I wanted to be a footballer, like anything, you know, in the world. And he said, no, go and do your A-levels. You're not going to make it.
Good judge, that boy. See, we jocks were always good judges.
The thing was, he was a good judge. He said to me, you're not going to make it, son. And I was heartbroken. But he was right, because in that youth team, nobody really made it. Only one lad sort of kicked on, a fellow called Tommy Tynan.
Yeah, we remember Tommy played for Tranmere.
Didn't have league careers, really.
So what age were you when he told you this, Steve? What
16.
Age? 16.
But you see, Steve, you've just mentioned Steve Koppel. You know the difference between yourself and Kopp? Steve realised his height was going to be a problem if he wanted to be a goalkeeper.
Yes.
It seems to me you never quite got the message.
That's because Tommy Lawrence was his hero. He wasn't the biggest goalie, was he?
At 5 foot nine, only Laurie Civil could have been shorter than you.
Yeah,
it was true. And it wasn't a fella called Cooper who played as well.
Paul Cooper, yes.
So anyway, I did the A-levels. Then I went and did PE teacher's training. And then did all the FA badges because I was encouraged to do them. I did my level, they call it the FA prelim, with Jack Charlton and Howard Wilkinson.
Wow.
And my God, that was fiery. They were fierce, but you learnt a lot off them. And then one day out of the blue, I got a phone call. Do you fancy going to Bahrain, you know, to be a full-time coach? Well, I never talked about the salary because I just said, yes, I'm going. You know, that was, I'd have swam there if I could. I had to firstly find out where Bahrain was.
I was going to say, you probably didn't know what it was. That would have been my first thought.
Not in those days. Yeah. And it was to work with a fellow called Jack Mansell, who was the national coach. And then a couple of English lads had gone in to be like player coaches with the club sides. And then when the national team came in, the league closed down and I went in to work with him. And again, he was a tough taskmaster. He put me in with national team players. I was about 24, and he'd tell me, coach them. Coach what you want to, coach what you see. And I thought it was a big thing in those days, coach what you see. So I did, and when I was good, he told me, and when I was bad, he told me. Yeah. And it was a few, you know, believe me, it was a few times it was bad. That's what made me learn Arabic, because none of the lads could speak English in those days. So I thought, and there was no television in Bahrain then, only a bloke reading the Quran from Saudi Arabia, which wasn't the best in the world. So I taught myself Arabic. I'm still literate. So I used to be able to write my name backwards in Arabic, but I lost that art a few years ago.
You've done better than us. You've done better than us. I mean, it's so hard, Steve.
To write in is impossible. Oh. But I found the words not too bad. So it's still stuck in me. It's had, you know, I can abuse referees in Arabic, which is coming handy. Yeah. Because you can get away with it. You don't get yellow cards or red cards when you say it in, you know, in Arabic. Well, I better not say it on your station.
Yeah. Why was it, Steve, that English opportunities didn't come? Apart from that 1 year at Sheffield Wednesday, your whole life has been spent in either the Middle or the Far East. Why did the coaching opportunities at home not materialise?
Well, basically, I had a playing career that was sort of cut short by a severe lack of ability.
Yeah.
And,
a bit like Keezy's.
You know,
and height.
Height and ability, there's two major factors. Yeah, you know, I was a great goalkeeper off the ball. You know, I was never a star. And in hindsight, never going to be a star. You know, I mean, if attitude and effort counted, I'd have been in goal for Liverpool.
Yeah.
But ability has to come into it somewhere along the line as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I was never going to make it. And in those days, unless you're a player, there was no opportunity otherwise. And there was also a lot less coaches and a lot less jobs. And this is in like early 70s. So I just thought, I want to be full-time. That's all I ever wanted to do in my life was be a full-time footballer. This is the second best job in the world, coaching, after playing.
Yeah.
I think nothing beats playing, you know.
No, it doesn't.
So basically, I just took the chance, and it just went on from there. And what I learned was, as a foreigner, you've got to win something. And if you win something, you get another contract. You know, and I often tell young coaches, I get loads of coaches now wanting to know what to do abroad and things like that. And the main thing, as I say, is win games. Forget anything else. Forget this philosophy, this project rubbish, the cliches. win football games. Because football games winning is political power. Because if you win three in a row, you might get more balls for the team, or you might get a flight rather than a bus, or you might get a pay rise, you know. And if you lose three in a row, if you lose three in a row, you shut up.
But that the problem here, Steve,
you're going to get sacked.
Now, I want you to be serious on this subject, because it is a serious subject, but also there is room for a half chuckle.
Right.
Explain to us how it is you can be successful abroad when not half the time, but some of the time, you know full well the result of the match has been decided before the kickoff.
Well, yeah, it's an unusual concept. I used to think it was black and white. You're a cheat or you weren't. But to use the cliche here, there's certainly a shade of grey involved. Yes. Because if you're doing it to win, purely to make money, that's okay, you cheat, I've got no time for you. But you got when you meet these lads, some of them have been threatened. Some of them have got pressure on them. Like, if you've got three kids and you haven't been paid for 4 months, what do you do? Mm. You know, the threat one came about to me was very easily. I asked one of my players, I said, why did you say no? Why didn't you say no? And all this. He says, coach, they ring you up. They say to you, we'll give you 10 grand, we'll say, to fix this game. And you say no, and they just say to you very quietly, does your mum still go shopping at Tesco's on Sunday?
No.
And you just, and in the silence, then I stupidly said, well, why didn't you report to the police? And he burst out laughing, and he said, your coach, it's all down to the system. Everyone gets a cut up the line. So they can't beat it. And the sad thing is, the bottom of the food chain, which is the player, he gets sniped. He gets banned for life. Mm. The big boys at the top do not get caught. And that is a real bugbear of mine.
Have you won games you knew that you shouldn't have done? Have you lost games that you expected to win? And what of the truth that you've managed players who would say to your coach, I'm yours, but I'm having two games of the season for myself?
Well, basically, when you're winning, you don't think it's fixed because you think you're a great coach. That's simple as that. You know, the first example of fixing was when I was in Malaysia. I was coming off the pitch at halftime, and an English lad, a very famous English lad, in fact, walked past me and said, you're going to win 2-0, Dubs. I said, how do you know? He said, they don't think I can speak, you know, Bahasa. He said, but I can. We ended up, we scored in the 84th and the 89th. Now, that didn't give us a time to get the third, and we didn't want a third because, you know, 2-0 is enough to win. They were never going to score, they decided, because they needed a two-goal spread. Because that's what you got to learn. It's not about winning or losing. It's about either spot fixing or spreads or how many goals. They call it ball over and ball under and things like this. And it was an education. I've lost a few. Now, some I've blamed the bookies because it was down to my coaching, but it was easier to blame the bookies. But there was certainly one, we were playing away and we were getting beat with 5 minutes to go, getting beat 2-1. And I've accepted that. That was a fair result. I'd have been delighted with a draw. Corner comes in, my keeper flicks it in his own net. Okay, that's 3-1. Last minute, 40-yard shot, and he's dipping and swerving and it whips into the net. Okay, 4-1. Didn't deserve that, but that's life. Watch the video the next day, or VHS in those days it was. And I realised the ball was straight. It's my goalkeeper who was swerving. So I pulled the captain in, who I thought was honest, which another mistake I made. And he said to me, coach, didn't you realise? We tried to win, which I thought they did. He said, but we'd all had a bet on before the game that if we were going to lose, we had to lose by 3 goals because that would have got us the same amount as the winning bonus. And it was a logic. It was a different logic. You know, you don't play in Liverpool Sunday League and throw soft goals in.
No.
You know, so you basically, I had to learn about that. But I mean, a goalkeeper come up to me. Well, he come up to one of my best mates coaching. And he was a top goalkeeper in the league. He said, 2 games are mine, coach, but don't worry, they'll be away from home, so there won't be any pressure on you.
Thank you. And, thanks, big man. It's very good of you.
So
what a great
he, he had to weigh up me, mate. He said, well, what do I do? He probably won us 10, 12 games a year on his own.
Yeah.
But two of them were his. And he said, why are you doing it? He said, oh, my kids are in private school. I want to look after them. And these two games will pay for the year's private school fees.
Steve, let me ask you, how high up the food chain do you think this goes?
Oh, the highest level you can think of, without a doubt. And I mean, you know, that the biggest one is
you're not talking Premier League status, surely.
Well, I think of this way. It's certainly, if you look at the research, there's a fellow called Declan Hill who wrote a book called The Fix, and he's an academic researcher on it.
Right.
And it was going on. Liverpool have done it, Man United have done it. Not recently, obviously, in the old days when money was different. I think now the Premier League isn't fixed because they can't afford to fix a player. Simple as that, because they earn too much money.
Gotcha.
But there is one vulnerable person on that pitch. And he's wearing black usually, or they wear yellow or green sometimes now. But you know, they're not earning a fortune. And some of the things I've seen, I'm perhaps because I'm cynical now, that's it. But I have cut out examples from a World Cup game where I'm certain that, knowing match fixing now, that this team in a World Cup game fixed it. Because it's not when the goalkeeper lets the ball through his legs. That's just my level. You know, it's when he makes a great save and palms it out into the path of the forward, or he throws it to a player whose first touch is 5 yards away and things like this.
What you're saying is it actually requires good players to cover up what they're doing, not daft players that just run in the wrong direction of the ball.
Yeah, the bad players can't do it. It's the good players. They're right, usually down the spine of the team, and they are, you know, the quality. I had won the team I was at, the last teams I was at in Malaysia. My centre-back was an international, not from Malaysian. He was a foreign international, and he was brilliant at it. I didn't realise till later he was fixing. And I watched the games. It's what he didn't do. He didn't pick somebody up in the box. You know, when he should have picked them up.
Clever. That's clever. Clever. I find myself. By the way, there's no such thing as a cynic. You've been there, Steve. You've seen it. You're a realist. You're a realist.
I've lost money on it. I've lost games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've had mates who've lost games.
I'm not condoning it when I say, yeah, that's clever. What I'm saying is, I get it. The top boys are smarter. Is it still going on? And if it is, to what degree?
Well, it's certainly still going on in Asia. And it went on recently in Australia, and apparently it's gone in the non-league in England, where it all comes down. While there's money in the game, there will be corruption.
Mm.
You know, simple as that. And you look at the money aspect. We had one game in Singapore, which you know quite well, that area there, where they had it's a legal government. The government run the betting. That's no problem. And in one game, if you scored 9 goals in the game, or you got 9 goals, it was 28-1. We won 7-2. And when the seventh goal went in, I saw about 300 lads walk out the other side. And I said to my assistant, because I always had local assistants, I said, what's happening? Why are they going? She said, oh, they've got the 9 goals, coach. It was fixed, obviously. As though it was nothing. I found out a year later, their goalkeeper had put on 2,000. So he'd got 56 grand for the game.
Wow.
Which was twice his yearly salary. Now, they were going to lose the game anyway, because we were going to win, because we had the best side in the league. And I watched the video again, and I realised he didn't make any mistakes. But what he was doing was, he was always a little bit to the wrong side of the angle. His angles are bad. And I had a Brazilian lad up front who could put the ball into his, you know, in a sixpence. And he was just passing it into the corners of the net.
You see, this is what you mean when you're talking about shades of grey. It isn't black and white. It's about survival sometimes, isn't it? And therefore, as you say, when there are the rewards available to the boys, it's really hard to say no. I mean... Again, I'm not condoning it. I'm understanding it.
I mean, when I was in Laos, we played Korea well, we were on the same pitch as Korea, I might say. You know, we were in there. I mean, you talk about tactics. Oh, you know, it was 28 minutes before their keeper touched the ball. That was a back pass. You know, so
you were quite defensive that day then, Steve.
Yeah. But one of me brighter lads worked it out and said, Son Heung-min was playing. What a player, you know. So Son was playing, and he earned more in a week than all of my first 11 did put together for a year. So that's where you've got to put it in perspective. And it's like, but Son was a great lad. He come out after the game, come up to me and said, thank you, coach, and see what you were trying to do. Because what I tried to do was I tried to get one of my players to kick him on the halfway line. Because I thought he might go off because he had a Premier League game at the weekend.
Good thinking. You know,
yeah, but he didn't. And the lad who tried come up, spoke to me. He said, coach, I couldn't get near him. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. He said, I said, don't worry. I understand. You know, it was like when I was at Tranmere once, we played against Liverpool youth and Phil Thompson was playing for the opposite, you know, for Liverpool. We couldn't get near him.
What, Tomo?
It was just like,
Tomo, come yeah. on.
His second chance.
Yeah. By the way, he'll be delighted if he's listening to this. Yeah. No one's ever said that about Tomo before.
Tomo needed a runway for his second touch.
It was middle of midfield. It was like a force field around
get
him.
Tomo. Right, we've got left, what was it like working with, and I'm not going to say for, with Peter Reid and Brian Robson?
An absolute education, both on and off the pitch.
I was going to say off the pitch, I get that, because I know them both very well. We both know them very well. So I get off the pitch. But did you learn anything on the pitch?
Oh, I mean, certainly. First thing is, both real football men, to use the correct phrase, and both love the game. Yeah. You know, they love the game as they did when they were kids, you could tell. Yeah. Never missed a session. Every session was organised. It was really good. Like, for example, Reedy, you know, he taught me about managing upwards. It's not often you get a lad from Heighton who had the Prime Minister of Thailand in his back pocket, you know. But
he's very good at that. Yeah, he is very good. Yeah. He understands
and
that.
And then, and then we were watching on the bus trips away. I put a video on usually, and the first trip away with Reedy, I put in Argentina against England, nothing happened. And then the captain came up the bus and whispered into my ear, coach, him. I said, yeah, him. Next minute, he shouted something out in Thai. Then about 25 lads came to the front of the bus. You played Diego. Why you no catch? Why you no catch? And of course, we were walking one day down the street in Bangkok. I was walking with Robbo, and we saw in front of us a lad with a Man United shirt on, number 7 on his back, and the name Lobson, Lobson. And the poor lad had thought that's how you spelled it, because that's how they said it then. But I mean, player. I put Robbo in a practice match once, and it was the first team against, you know, the reserves in the national team, and the middle of midfield come off and say, coach, he's the best player on the team. He's 56.
Yeah.
You know, and he ran the show at 56. You know, what a player. So the next session, I got me midfield lad to shadow him. And he came off and said, after 30 minutes, he said, coach, the ball comes to him. He's like a ball magnet. You know, the Thai translation of ball magnet. You know, but we had match fixing there, you know, usually in our favour in Thailand. But the scariest moment was we were in Iran and it was 0-0. There was 100,000 people in the stadium.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at Robbo and said, my God, I hope we lose. Unfortunately, we did. Oh, got it. Fortunately, we got beat 1-0, you know, because it was absolutely petrified, you know, over there. Yeah. So, but I mean, two great blokes. Taught me a lot. Lots of little things you didn't realise. How to handle the media, how to manage upwards, you know. And, of course, on the park, they could see things, wonderful things, you know.
Do you think the Premier League has stopped British coaches needing to go abroad or wanting to go abroad, Steve? Do you think it's been detrimental in that respect?
There's more jobs now, which is great for lads. You know, some of them, I mean, some of these analysts are hilarious. I'm still looking for this half space. I've never found it yet. you know. And to me, the only philosopher I reckon was Socrates, who played for Brazil. You know, I can't.
He was a good player.
You know, but I see, you know, I see someone like Sean Dyche doing a fantastic job, and I see some of the con men. And I use that word. Obviously, you can't name them; it's out of order. Who am I to say someone in the Premier League is a con man? But I've heard of from players that these fellas, particularly Portuguese, I don't mean Jose, you know, particularly Portuguese, who are absolute rogues and con men. They've got no idea. They've just got a great agent, and they get away with murder when there's genuinely good lads. And I also include foreigners like your Klopps, obviously, you know, and Tuchel. They seem to be really top operators. But I mean, I work on the view that there's better coaches than me unemployed, and there's some absolute con men and rogues have made millions out of the game. So if you can't worry about it.
No.
You just have to accept it, because that's life. You know, it might be the same in the commentary game. You know, there's people you must see nicking a living. You know, and
there is an industry there, yeah. Steve. There is an industry, that's for sure.
Yeah.
There is a book, Steve, is there not? You've written down many of your overseas experiences. What's it called and where is it available?
Yeah, well, it's coming out soon. A lad called Anthony Sutton, who's known as Jakarta Casual, who's a football fanatic, he approached me and said, "Can I write your life story?" I said, "Yeah," because I've had a few people say that. And then they never follow through. But this lad, he's taken over about 18 months to do it. And he's rang people, he's researched it, he's found the bad sides as well. You know, and I said to him, "Look, there's things I can't talk about because my mum's still alive."
That's very good analogy, absolutely, son.
Yeah, so it's called The Itinerant Coach. And at first I thought he meant, "I can't read or write." You know, I didn't know what itinerant meant. You know, then I found, you know, it's basically that someone who's just travelled around and I've been in the right place, the right time, been dead lucky. I've got to, you know, I always think I've been lucky that I wake up every morning when I was working.
No, Steve, hold on again. I'm sorry. No, you haven't been lucky. You made your own luck. Yeah. You got a call out of the blue and somebody said, "Come to Bahrain." You said yes. Now, all right, the generation of the call may have been a little fortuitous, but you had the courage to say yes. Mm-hmm. So you forced luck. You shouldn't dismiss a fabulous career by saying you've been dead lucky. You haven't. You've worked at it and you've worked hard.
Well, I have to admit, I've worked hard. The hardest part was Singapore, where I was doing almost full-time on television work as well. You know, and because in those days, you know, imagine, you know, it was the European Games, yeah, in the middle of the morning, you know, the middle 3 a.m. So I was going straight from training, from the TV with ESPN, straight to training at 8 a.m. And one day I went with, I forgot to take my makeup off. You know,
there would be a lot of that.
I'm guessing you were working with our mate, you'd have been working with John Dykes, presumably.
Yeah, with Dykesy, yeah. I worked with Dykesy.
Good lad. Great lad.
And I mean, there was some people like John Beresford, Jerry Armstrong,
yes,
Paul Walsh.
Yeah.
Really, really, you know, they took their work seriously, those lads, you know. Yeah. I first met Robbo over there. You know, he used to come over. I mean, you get all sorts of lads come over, but most of them were dedicated pros. Like your Beresford and your Walshies did their homework. Jerry Armstrong did his homework, you know, which...
Yeah, you see,
it's
the one thing I always wanted to do, Steve. That I was, of course, stuck. It's not the right word. I was a domestic broadcaster, week in, week out. And I used to hear tales, and the boys came back. You know, Barnsley had been to various different places in the world, and I used to say to myself, "Do you know what? One thing before I finish, I need to go and work elsewhere,
South Africa,
and somewhere. Yeah, this is why I love being in Qatar. I love working for BN Sports because it's a, you know, at a probably a time of the life I should be retired, Steve. I absolutely love it.
It's Keezy not thinking about that.
Last question then. Where in the world are you?
Right. I'm in the posh part of Liverpool on the Wirral now.
No.
Because basically I was born in Anfield, but that place is a bit like Syria and Lebanon now. And
no.
I moved my mum across here because it's a bit safer for her.
Yeah, you're in the posh side now.
Yeah, that's the reason now I'm back here. Basically, my mum, you know, getting on a bit. So it's about time you got to do the right thing.
Yes.
And one of the things I was well, again, while I was coaching, I tried to keep up the education because you know you're going to get sacked. Mm. You know, Reedy once told me, you either get sacked or you resign. Mm. And he's dead right, isn't he? You know, so I train, I teach handicapped kids. So I've been working, I teach special needs kids, nice. Which, having coached some of the lads I've coached, is quite similar. And when you've coached Lau in the World Cup, believe me, you know, getting out your own half was an achievement.
Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you. I rather suspect the book is going to stir up a lot more of these same calls.
Yes.
I'm surprised that you haven't been the recipient of requests to this point, but having listened to you for the last 30 minutes or so, I think that's going to be the case. Be more specific. Which part of the Wirral? It's a part of the world I know well.
Oxton.
Yeah, nice.
You know Oxton?
Yeah, nice.
Posh?
Yeah.
Posh,
I lived in Irby.
Is that posh?
Oh, yeah, yes. Down the road. Yeah.
Well, no, not yeah. posh. No.
Not posh.
Well, no, it's lovely. Irby Village is gorgeous. Yeah, yeah. I was on the...
Oxton or Irby? What's the poshest?
Oxton.
Oxton.
Yeah.
That's
where the money goes.
But I promise you, it doesn't come from match fixing.
Good lad. Steve, thank you for your time.
Thanks,
it's been
Steve.
An absolute pleasure.
Cheers. I love the show. Thanks very much.
Thank you, buddy. What a good lad. Honestly, what a good lad. I look at you and when he's talking about the fixing, there is not a bone in your body would find that acceptable, is there, as a player?
No.
A bone.
No.
But do you understand when a player of a certain level can make 2 years' money by conceding two more goals in a football match he's going to lose anyway, allows that to happen?
Of course you can... I was going to say, you understand? Yeah, I can't understand. You're right. But I get it. When he was talking about that, these guys are earning diddly squat. Mm. They get an opportunity to financially make their family secure for the next 2 years or put the kids through private school, things that they would never be able to dream of doing. Of course the temptation is there. It must be. And it must be hard to resist. Plus the fact, not just that, but if people are being threatened, if families are being threatened, it puts you in a terrible position.
Very much.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and listen... Over the years with you, in the last 10, 12 years in particular, when we've talked about this match fixing, yes, you have to accept that in other countries. That's why I asked him how high up the food chain does he think it goes. And I was pleased to hear him say that in the big leagues now, you can't afford to.
No, there's too much. The boys
too much money. They have too much money to be. But as I said to you just off air there, you have to think that teams in Division 2 and Division 1 in England even, they don't earn that much money, these boys.
No.
Not enough. So if somebody was coming along and offering them 50, 100 grand to just manipulate a football match, it would be really difficult.
I've always said it's like drugs in sport. If you don't shine the torch too brightly in the corner, you haven't got a problem. When you go looking, you've then got to sort it out. So if we kind of live with it, which they appear to do, part of the world in which Steve has worked, then who are we to say that that's not right?
Yep.
Anyway, this is we're going to take is the word hiatus? By the way, our Portuguese colleague here, who's in charge of all the technical operation. Yeah. My goodness, he started blinking when he...
Steve was on about Portuguese. Yes. No good, rubbish and all that. Well, I'll tell you what.
Cataplana and a glass of wine on the way.
I love a good Portuguese cataplana. You can't beat it. Yeah, but what about my countrymen upsetting the Portuguese? About your sandwich.
Oh, Gordon Ramsay.
Yes.
Oh, scandalous.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Scandalous. Absolutely. Gordon, you've got that wrong. Okay.
Now, I've just talked to Luis this morning. I said, is it the proper... He said, it's a mess. He's made a complete mess of our sandwich.
Of course.
How dare he tell us how to make a sandwich?
You wouldn't want an Englishman going to Glasgow and reinventing the play piece, would you?
No. Or haggis.
No.
Stay away from our haggis. It's ours. Yeah.
There you go.
Gordon, stay away from the sandwich. It's not yours.
We won't be here next week. When we come back, it'll be in a very... very exciting new format. Mm-hmm. I would encourage, now you found us, continue to listen and tell your mates. Keys and Grey Pod is the best place to get in touch via Instagram. But 2 weeks from now, we are...
International break.
Yes, correct. But back with some really exciting news. Thank you for your company today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.